Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It is high noon. This is Nation Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have Oilers stories of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Major hockey news around the world. It's Alan Mitchell, joined by my producer, Connor Halley. Hey, what time is it in your world, Connor?
12 o'clock.
12 o'clock.
Are we talking central or?
Yeah, I don't know. Is Ludicky on at 9 tonight or what?
He might not even be on. I don't know. I might have had the wrong guest.
That's a little inside Twitter information. Connor and the entire Mountain Standard Time got a little bit of a workout on Twitter today. Your questions welcome today. Email them to nationradio@team1260.com or Twitter at @itsnationradio or @lowtide_. We'll grab questions from the blogs as well. Our guests include Jonathan Willis, who took a vacation, and I noticed the amount of actual internet Oiler talk went down substantially. We'll ask him about that and talk about the summer and how the Oilers and the NHL looks. Kirk Ludicky will join us at the top of hour number two, we're hoping, from New England Hockey Journal and Red Line Report. We led up to the draft with Kirk, and he got great information. And now, of course, we have an opportunity to talk a little bit about the Oilers. We usually talk Bruins and the other Canadian teams as well, and some of the surprises that he noticed from the draft after what was a very interesting 2012 entry draft. Cam Davey, a tinfoil toque from Canucks Army, going to talk a lot about the Canucks in their summer. Also, the road hockey to conquer cancer. I know you might have read the Robin Brownlee article on Oilers Nation, and make sure to sponsor Robin because it's a great cause. But Cam has been touched personally in his family by cancer and is doing a lot of hard work for the cause. We'll talk to him about that and the Canucks as well. David Staples from the Cult of Hockey just around the corner, arena, team building, free agency, and more. And later on in the hour, Jeff Crischel from Crush Sports Performance. He'll guide us through the summer and what these athletes will be doing around this time and whether or not the supposed or possible lockout might impact their training and what they're planning on doing. It's 12:03. The big news this week, Oilers signing Nail Yakupov. Oilers and Russian players isn't exactly one of those, you know, marriages that we see often. It's not a large sample size over the last 40 years. But Nail will join Nikolai Khabibulin, Boris Mironov, legendary Bobo stories, Sergei Samsonov, he was here for the Stanley run, Igor Ulanov, still a favorite of some people I know. Igor, he may be playing somewhere. He is a hardy man, there's no doubt. Other Russian Oilers, I think Nail will end up being the best of the bunch. He has all kinds of personality, amazing release, high skill level. We saw that at the prospects camp, and there's a lot of joy in Edmonton because he's signed, and I can't wait for training camp, and I know I'm not alone. He's worth getting excited about, and along with Hall and the Nuge and Eberle and Gagne and Pajarvi and all these kids up front, plus with Justin Schultz and Smead and Petrie and all the other guys on the blue line, things are you know, trending upward. There's an upward tick for the Edmonton Oilers entering 12-13 whenever it starts. Also this week, the Oilers did sign Alex Plante and Chris Van de Velde. Both are likely to see action in both Edmonton and Oklahoma City this coming season. Plante is a waiver worry. He'll be eligible for the first time this fall, but he had his finest pro season in 11-12. He was an AHL All-Star. Van de Velde might be I think he might be number five on the center depth chart right now, depending upon how the organization feels about sending Anton Lander down to Oklahoma City for an entire year. If that's the case, then Van de Velde would be behind Nuge, Gagne, Horkoff, and Belanger on the center depth chart and would definitely see some action during the year. I think the last RFA/UFA left, Cam Barker, I understand they're not bringing back. I believe they said that. But Linus Olmark was qualified, not signed, and they have a couple of more days to deal him. I think this is a guy who's going to end up playing in the KHL or the Swedish Elite League, somewhere like that, and maybe reclaiming his NHL career down the line. But he certainly showed some flashes when he had an opportunity in the National Hockey League. Elsewhere, Alex Semin signed a one-year, $7 million deal with Carolina. A lot of money. A surprise location, too. Until about maybe 2 weeks before it happened, I don't recall the Hurricanes being one of the teams that everybody was talking about, but they have certainly upgraded their talent with Stahl and now Semin this summer. It'll be interesting to see. That Eastern Conference often doesn't have the strongest teams, but man, everybody seems equal. So a couple of moves like what Carolina has done this summer could mean great things for fans of the Carolina Hurricanes. And that's Gregor's team, right, Connor? I think that's Jason's favorite team, the Carolina Hurricanes. He doesn't cheer for any team, but the one that he sort of likes with the crazy music is the Carolina Hurricanes. Is that the Gregor thing? Thanks. That's not...
Like the Hartford Whalers.
Whalers, Caroline Hurricane. Yes. What's the name of that song? It's
Brass Bonanza.
Yeah. Let's not play that.
Oh. Okay. I was just going to.
No, we don't want to do that. Last time this week, we were talking about Shea Weber and the offer sheet and whether or not Nashville would match. They did. And now we're at a point where the free agent season, both UFA and RFA, is dwindling down. But Shane Doan is still out there. And rumor has it that an Eastern Conference team has offered him a 4-year deal with $7.5 million or more per season. It's a lot of moolah. Jonathan Willis has the story up at NHL Numbers and takes you through it. We'll talk to him about that later on in the show. I'd love to see Shane Doan here. You know, it would right an historic wrong, as they say. But at that kind of money for 4 years, you know that the Fab Four up front will be getting paid big dollars by then. Not like they're not now, but those will be the big free agent dollars that they're going to be buying by that time. And then the blue line, Ladislav Smead, Jeff Petrie, Schultz, maybe Klefbom by that time. So a 4-year deal, I don't think it's in the cards for the Edmonton Oilers and Shane Doan. Vancouver might be a possibility, and we'll talk to our friend Tinfoil Took about that, Cam Davey, later on in the show. Okay, it's 7 minutes after 12. I had a chance to talk to David Staples from the Cult of Hockey and the Edmonton Journal about all kinds of things, and we began with discussion of the arena.
Well, it's proceeding, but there's a big fight over money in a nutshell. So it's the same it's been for the last 2 or 3 years, I guess. You know, the majority of council supports this. There's some cold feet about the kind of building that they will go up. You know, do they want to build a top drawer, beautiful building, or, you know, kind of run-of-the-mill building? And my fear is, my concern is that we're going to be going for run-of-the-mill. I think that's a big mistake. We've seen repeatedly in Edmonton what happens when you make compromises on buildings. You just get average, mediocre, ugly buildings, which our city is full of. And on this one, I'm hoping that Daryl Cates steps up. And I'm hoping that the city steps up and decides this time we're going to get it right. This is hockey. Hockey is our secular religion. It's what we're most passionate about in this city. Like when the Oilers win, you know, our wives look more beautiful. It's easier to drive to work. The food tastes better in this city. It's big in this culture. This arena is the shrine for hockey. It's our face to the rest of the world for hockey. It's a very important building for Edmontonians. And you can see that with the obsession about this debate, both people against it and for it. Why are people so fiercely against it? It's because they're obsessed on some level with hockey as well and with the cultural importance of hockey. So what I'm hoping is that's recognized, how important this building is. And if we're going to build this building, why build a crap building? Why build a mediocre building? So it's incumbent on Cates to step up and put more money into this. And it's incumbent on the city to do the same thing and build it right, do it right, so it really works for our downtown. One example is they're thinking of either putting stainless steel on the outside or zinc. Stainless steel starts to fade after a while, starts to look crappy after 20, 30, 40 years. The Butter Dome, which is now fading, is stainless steel. It looks okay, but it's increasingly over time, it's starting to look more like margarine dome. And what we need, the other option is to go with zinc, which is what coats the art gallery. It's a beautiful natural, it's a beautiful metal, and it weathers over time. It starts to look better and different over time. It lasts for 200 years as opposed to steel, which has a shorter lifespan. So this is the kind of decision that's made. They're talking about, you know, whether they're going to put concrete on the floors or some more beautiful substance on the floor. I can't remember. Is it terrazzo or what's the flooring? So I just think if we're going to spend money on a public building and make it look beautiful, the arena is the place to do it in. And let's not cheap out at the last minute because we're worried about people who wouldn't spend a dime on anything to make the city look good. And so it's going to take both groups to step up. I hope that happens, and I think it will.
David, is there any sense of, and I understand I have a layman's knowledge of this, but is there any sense of there's a gap between the two? There's some dollars that have to be figured out. Reopening some areas of it, maybe the naming rights for the building or something, and getting a third partner, or is that absolutely not going to happen?
There's all kinds of creative ways to look at funding this thing. And sure, they might have to really put on their thinking caps now and come up with a different kind of solution. I mean, if Kate's had his way, it would be funded completely through the community revitalization levy, which basically gathers taxes from downtown and keeps them downtown for downtown infrastructure, which would be the arena. If the city had its way, it would all be ticket tax, which is basically taking money out of Kate's pocket. And it would be a user fee. And Kate's would be paying more and more ticket tax. I think there's some way they can work around this, perhaps. Maybe get, in the short term, have Kate's pay increased ticket tax. In the long term, if the CRL works, if this does really boost taxes in the downtown, then the city could come back to, we'll have a scale. If the CRL takes off and covers this bet, starts to pay for the arena and more, starts to generate a lot of revenues for the city, then we're going to really decrease your ticket tax. The arena will have served its purpose. It will have worked. Your bet will have paid off. So I think there's some way of perhaps balancing the risk that can work for Kate's and work for the city, both in the long run, because the interest of the city is served if this is if on a number of fronts. Kate's, if he puts in the more money that Kate's puts in, the better, because then he'll be fierce as heck in driving this project forward and making sure it's as good as possible. If it's built well, it will be much more likely to be successful. And if it's built downtown, that's the right spot. So we're all served by this. We just have to make sure it happens.
The last question on this, and then we'll move on. A guesstimate as to when we see shovels in the ground.
I think we'll see them next spring. I think the deal is going to come together in the next, through the fall. We'll have a vote in January, the final vote, and we'll see shovels in the ground in the spring.
Okay, sounds good. Now, let's talk a little bit of hockey. The Oilers were very busy before July 1st, and then the morning of July 1st with Justin Schultz and Ryan Smith. It's my feeling that maybe Oiler fans have forgotten how active early on the team was, and there are some improvements. How's your feeling about the team right now and what they've done so far?
I think they've done pretty, signing Justin Schultz was such a home run. And until we actually see this player, I think he's kind of forgotten now, strangely, because we haven't seen him on the ice. People are, he's penciled into the lineup, but there's real questions about him. And there's every expectation that he will be an NHL hockey player in his first year, and probably someone who is a reasonable puck-moving defenseman right off the hopper. So, that was huge, and I think people have forgotten that. They got rid of Cam Barker, which was a huge move, not bringing him back. To me, everyone's crying for another defenseman. I might be a little bit too bullish on Laddie Smead and Jeff Petrie, but at the end of the year, Petrie played the toughest competition that the NHL has to offer. He and Smead played the toughest competition, and they held their own. To me, that defines a defenseman that can do the job as a number one defenseman. Now, if you want someone better than that, like a true superstar, they're going to dominate that. Like, those players are impossible to get. That's Drew Doughty. You just, who's going to get that? But I don't think, I hear talk of maybe trading Jeff Petrie for P.K. Subban, for instance, or Jeff. I just don't see it. I don't know how much better P.K. Subban actually is than a player like Jeff Petrie. I'm sure Subban has some real strengths to the game, but he also has warts. Whereas what I saw with Petrie was he was getting the job done. So I don't see the need on the first unit. The second unit, if you have Nick Schultz, he looks like a strong second pairing defenseman, and it's either going to be Justin Schultz or Ryan Whitney. If you bring in a top four defenseman, where does Justin Schultz move to when he's ready to be in the top four? It doesn't, on a certain level, it doesn't make sense. I mean, you already have Ryan Whitney also, who in the final 2 months of the season, when you look at his underlying numbers in terms of shots at net and scoring chances, Ryan Whitney was getting the job done in the final 2 months. So he seems to have learned to play with his bad ankle, his bad feet. I think it's a combination of all those things. So I really think the defense, then you also have Sutton, Potter, Peckham. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, I always do. They're not that poorly off on the blue line. And I don't see that as the hole. I see the hole as in net. And just like it was last year, and they continue to put all this faith in Habib Bulin. And I don't see it. If Dubnyk doesn't step up, and he stepped up at the very end of last year at the final month, but he was pretty mediocre through the year. If Dubnyk falters or if he gets injured, you're left with Habibulin. And this team, again, will lose and lose badly if he's the goalie based on the last two seasons. I think that's a fair comment. So I think, and I've always thought that what the biggest need is a goalie who can challenge Dubnyk in the nets. And I know other people don't agree with that, but to me, that's still the big hole.
I think people maybe believe that will happen next summer when Habibulin's contract runs, but I agree with you. I think goaltending is definitely a concern. How do you feel about... I have a running theory about Ryan Whitney, and it goes like this. Jason Gregor had talked to Whitney and put the theory out there that this is the first opportunity Whitney's had to train all spring and summer for quite some time due to his operation and injuries. So he may be able to come back at a higher level than we've seen in quite some time, at least the first year he was here. So my theory is that the Oilers might be getting good reports on Whitney's progress, and that may have tempered their need for a defenseman. How do you feel about that?
I like that theory. That's a good theory.
Good.
A very optimistic theory.
Okay, I'm going to run with it.
It sounds reasonable enough. And, there is also, it was Jonathan Willis who writes for a number of blogs, including The Cult of Hockey, where I write, that pointed out about Whitney's underlying numbers, how his shots numbers and his Nielsen numbers, his scoring chance numbers, the thing that I track, in the final 2 months had been pretty darn strong for a defenseman. And that was news to me. I hadn't realized that, but I believe in those numbers. I think if they're lining up with the shots and the scoring chance numbers are lining up and saying this guy was doing his job, he was. And we didn't see it because there was still the odd glaring mistake from Whitney, but incrementally his game improved last summer. So if he was clearly getting a little bit better as the year went on, starting from atrocious, like just awful, to someone who was doing well against okay competition, not the best competition, because Smead and Petrie were facing that. And then this summer, if he can continue to build on his health is everything for a hockey player. He still will always have fragile health, but I think it's not at all unlikely that he comes back and is capable of playing in the top four.
Ralph Krueger has... I've been around the Oilers since 72 as a fan anyway, and this team, I don't recall the last time there was such a positive spin and reaction from fans and players about a new coach. Can you go back in your memory banks and remember anything like the Krueger love fest we're experiencing right now?
Well, that's interesting, because I don't know if I'm experiencing that myself. I see him as a positive choice and a good choice, but you see a love fest.
Well, I hear players talking.
From the players.
Right, and then I also hear a lot of fans just that I'm talking to feeling like this was maybe a move that is an extreme positive. My initial reaction...
I'll tell you what, Kevin Lowe, when he was hired, Alan.
Yeah.
When Kevin Lowe was hired, when he came back to Edmonton and became the coach, I think people... And then when we became the GM, people were through the roof on that. I think that we would, like, if we had done polling then, because we're doing these fan polls all the time on all the various blogs, and if we had done polling, I think it would have been through the roof. Krueger, I think we did some polls, and I think he had, like, it was like 70% approval of the, if I recall correctly. So I think it's really high. I think people are in favor of him. And I think he got a big boost from the Schultz thing.
Yeah.
When Schultz said, I came in, the coach talked to me about my role, and that was a big part of me coming here. I think that was huge with people, because that was a huge moment in Edmonton when Schultz came here. As you know, we've lost players ever since Paul Coffey, right? The route's been out of town. This was the first time a free agent has actually chosen, a prominent free agent player has chosen Edmonton, and it made people here, Oilers fans here, a little bit giddy. And to hear that Krueger played a big role in that, I think, got him tremendous brownie points. He's also, I've met him. He's an impressive person. He presents well. He's a positive person. I think people like what he's saying. They like what they're hearing from him. So, not surprised that people like him.
You want to hear
I like it.
You want to hear my Justin Schultz advanced math?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Al Hamilton signed here in 1972, and I remember that as being a big moment because he was an NHL guy. I had his hockey card, so he must be good, right?
Yeah.
25 years later, Paul Coffey is traded, and we know about all the hassles with contracts and the reason why he left town. It was a lot about money along with the trade. 25 years after Coffey gets traded, Justin Schultz signed. So it's my rule of 25. We're going to have 25 great years now, buddy.
Hamilton being the lead defenseman, then Coffey, and now Schultz will fill that role.
I'm thinking. I might be putting too much pressure on him. I'm not sure.
I think you made as sound and as ironclad an argument as I've heard in the last 25 years.
Okay, that's good. Let's talk about...
No. Hey, Alan, I want to say one thing on the radio. How much I love your blog.
Oh.
I just think, you know, it is, you know, I read the comments, read the blog all the time, and it's everything a blog should be, and I just wanted to tell you that.
Well, it's very nice of you, David. I don't know what to say. I'm speechless, for once.
Well, it's great reading, so thanks.
I appreciate that. Now, let's talk about a guy who should be great viewing, and that's Neil Yakupov, who Coach Kruger says might play on the left side, but he's a natural right winger. How do you think that might flesh out?
I see the ability. I think some wingers and wingers generally have more of an ability to play different wings than defensemen do. I think they're a bit more interchangeable, and a young player should be somewhat adaptable. It'll depend who's passing him the puck and where he gets his shot off from. He seemed to be unbelievably maneuverable, flying all over the place anyway. So in the NHL, if you put Hall and Yakupov out there on the same one, they would just be flying all over everywhere anyway, wouldn't they? They're just all over. And you know, first man in has a job, second man in goes elsewhere, and the great players start to work out little trick plays and set plays between themselves. So I think they'll be able to work out the chemistry. And I really see in Yakupov a high degree of hockey sense. I'm not sure if he's going to be up there with Eberle or Nugent Hopkins, but I think he might be. When he gets the puck, one of two things happens. He either snaps off a brilliant shot at net, and probably the best shot that we're going to see on the Oilers next year at net, or he makes a real quick pass. He doesn't hold the puck too long. He doesn't try to dilly-dally with it too much. So I think he is a player who can fit in with any number of players, would fit in of any, you know, because he has such tremendous hockey sense, would obviously work well with Hopkins and Eberle. Probably you want two of those guys together, and Yakupov would, I think, among the forwards, Eberle, RNH come first for hockey sense, then Yakupov and Horkov are going to come next. And I don't see Horkov playing on a top line, but Yakupov is going to help whoever he's with on the second line make them look better.
What have you got coming up on the Cult of Hockey over the next little while?
I've been looking at what fans thought last year and what they're thinking this year. So last year, at this time, about 40% of Oilers fans thought the Oilers would make the playoffs. And that was fairly high expectations. And as it turned out, it caused trouble for the Oilers, I think. You know, this is why we hear the grumbling about Tambellini now, because I think a lot of people expected a lot last year. Now it's 55% expect the Oilers to make the playoffs this year. And this is, you know, so fans are optimistic. But again, this is on a certain level, this is heat on Tambellini and Oilers management. I think this winter, if there isn't pronounced improvement, there's going to be real trouble, and this management team won't be able to hang on. They've got to demonstrate this year that the team is moving in the right direction, and if that doesn't happen, there's trouble.
So next time we can talk about McT as GM.
Yeah, maybe they'll promote Tambellini and make McT, I don't know, I guess McT's already his boss, but yeah. McT's obviously a very bright guy. He has an interest in analytics, I believe, and you know, he's going to add a lot to the mix. I think he already has.
David, thanks for this. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan.
That's David Staples from the Cult of Hockey, 1225. Connor, how do you see Yakupov working into the lineup? As far as, do you think he'll be left wing, right wing?
I'm hoping for right wing.
Yeah.
Put him up front, you know, even up the lines a little bit. Eberle with maybe Hemsky, Hall, Nuge, Yakupov.
This is what I would like to. I think Hemsky could play left wing.
So he did it at the World Championships,
yeah.
Did he not?
Yeah. So you put Hall, Hemsky on left wing, Ebbs, like I know the guy, Eberle and Yakupov.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, that's right. Eberle and Yakupov at right wing, and then the Nuge and Gagne down the middle. And that's a pretty good top six.
And then your third line?
Horkoff, Smith, Jones.
And fourth?
My fourth line would be Belanger with Hartikainen and Pajärvi. But I don't
and
think
no that, Eager. No well, Hordachuk.
No, that's right.
Where's your toughness?
My toughness is when you take a penalty.
What about Petrell?
I don't think Leonard Petrell makes the team. I know they signed him. They have too many forwards. They need to make a 3-for-1 trade for a defenseman. I've been saying that since 2001, and I think I'm getting close. Very close.
You're getting there.
Hey, guess who's up next? It's Jonathan Willis, and he's from the Cult of Hockey, too, all over the Algor as well, and Oilers Nation. We'll talk to Jonathan on the way. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.